So I reiterate here, the bill is dead.
The story of this great city is about the years before this night.
We are free!
Hey everybody, welcome to Ho Ho Hong Kong. I am your host, Andy Curtin, and I'm coming to you from Hong Kong. I'm here with my very good friend,
Vivek Mabubani.
And we've got a special guest on this week, Fabio Nicotra. How you doing, buddy?
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm very good. Good to see you all.
Yeah, if you want to find me online, at Andy Curtin on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all of that.
Yeah, I'm sure by now all our fans probably know that. But just to remind you again, at Funny Vivek with
you
the letter
do
M.
It. People forget, buddy.
Yeah, that's true. People don't do it.
Especially
I've been watching the stats.
You put online, they unfollow.
That's the problem. I've noticed. I'm like, this guy just followed me on Monday and unfollowed me on Tuesday. What am I doing?
All those workout videos you're posting.
Yeah, those are supposed to be private, but I don't know how to use Facebook.
You're not a social media dude?
Oh, no, I can barely use technology. I'm like an old man.
That's a good place to be.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen The Social Dilemma?
I was watching that last night, actually.
You've seen it?
It's very scary, yeah.
Have you seen this?
No, I have not seen this.
You have to watch this.
I have a social dilemma in my life already.
No. Like, it's so they basically, they've taken...
You are a social dilemma.
Yeah, exactly. That's why. I'm like, why would I go watch something like that?
Probably over the first hit of the day.
Oh,
it's great.
It's on, man. The chef is here.
No, but so basically they've got... Like, what was good about it was they're not fucking around with the people they have on it. It's like the guy that invented the like button for Facebook.
Yeah.
It's like senior people from Facebook and Google and Instagram. And they're like, this is how we're using apps to change your behavior and sell your attention to companies. And it's terrifying.
I don't want to know that. I don't want to know the reality that they're controlling behind.
It's pretty scary. Like, I don't know. Did you watch the whole thing?
No, I didn't. I got about halfway through the first episode and then I fell asleep. But I think it sort of confirmed what we all sort of knew.
Yeah, it was
We always scroll and we always think, oh, well, that's weird. How did they know exactly what I was thinking?
Yeah.
And the fact that they're telling us that there's an algorithm behind it. Yeah, it's very scary. It's crazy.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't feel like it wasn't anything that was like wildly unknown, but I think it was just hearing the guys that invented it about how they did it.
It wasn't just a theory anymore. They're like, yeah, that actually is what's going on. You're like,
but there's also stuff about like one of the sinister things they talk about is like YouTube's recommended videos.
Yeah.
That's how they start to sculpt. And they don't even know how it works. It's an algorithm.
So yeah.
They've set it up to achieve something and then it's running to its own processes.
So that's why like whenever I use YouTube, I try my best to always search for like smart videos, like TEDx and those kinds of talks. So when I load it up, it gives me them smart things so I can't, you know, waver off into watching, I don't know, Shaqtin the Fool or something.
Well, you got to stick to websites, you know, that aren't working against you, like Pornhub.com.
That's incognito.
That's not trying to push you into any.
So like we said last time, incognito mode is where I go to YouTube with all my other videos.
I don't know who you are.
Yeah, exactly, right? There's no algorithm in incognito.
The other thing I want to mention is, so yesterday I did, so Ryan, who we had on the pod, he was talking about canyoning and stuff like that. Man, maybe the best thing I've done since I've been in Hong Kong.
Canyoning.
It was very good.
You're telling me you came all the way to Hong Kong, this city, this concrete jungle, and you're telling me the best thing you have achieved and done is canyoning in Hong Kong.
It was very good.
Andy, have you done nothing while you've been here that this was
much.
The top of the list?
I haven't been on a junk yet, so let's put that in perspective.
Yeah, you are clearly not fitting into the stereotypical Caucasian living in Hong Kong lifestyle.
Yeah. Do you do junks ever?
Me? I've done junks
for
before.
Work, right.
Okay, it's for work. So I've done a few work, like junk gigs and stuff.
How bad is a gig on a boat?
Oh, it's the worst, dude. It's the worst because like every now and then you're trying to get your balance and you're thinking what's going on. People are not really paying attention. The sun starts setting like, crap, it's happening.
How am I more interesting than the most beautiful metropolis vista of the world?
Ironically, the sun, whenever it's set, red light. It's giving you the red light to shut up.
There you go.
Yeah.
Wait, you're performing during the day?
You would have daytime junk trips and corporate gigs or whatever, man.
Oh my
it's
God.
Terrible.
Cantonese, right?
This I forget now. It's been many, many years, dude. I don't take.
You just
those
don't
things.
Take that
yeah,
anymore.
No, not happening. I mean, it's not that common anyway. But I've done. Okay, so the craziest gig I've done on a ship would be at Jumbo. You know that restaurant, the seafood restaurant. In Aberdeen side?
I don't know, but yeah.
Okay, so this big ship, right? It's like really famous. People have to take a little small little boat to it, get on the basically it's a floating restaurant called
Is
Jumbo
super
Restaurant.
Is it expensive?
Not really. No, Jumbo's not that.
Oh, yes. I know the one that you're talking about.
Yeah, in Aberdeen side.
Yep.
So they have this floating restaurant deal.
It's quite
famous.
Sounds awesome.
It's very famous. Yeah, it's very cool. And then so what they have is, right, they have two sides of the boat, identical restaurants, so they could accommodate people, and the middle is like the staircase. So I had a gig where basically, you do set number one in room A, and you run over to room B and do set number one again. And then you have to time it so perfectly because, like, while room A is watching my show, room B has another show. So if I suddenly finish too early, then room B's performance is still going on. So it's like, room A's like, what do we do now? We don't know what to look at.
Mort Sol has this great bit about how, I can't remember what comedy club it was, but it was like the 40s, right?
Yeah.
And maybe the 50s or something, but he's doing one room and Lenny Bruce is doing the other room.
Yeah, yeah.
So the cops come in and arrest Lenny Bruce for his material. And they're like, hey, Mort, you finished this room. Can you do the other room? And then he gets a letter or something from a fan being like, I went to see Lenny Bruce the same night. This guy's stealing your material.
Yeah. I'm sure people probably will confuse that. Not to like, did I? What same show? What's
it's amazing. But that just shows how people like comedians, like they love me. It's like, dude, they don't even remember you.
Yeah,
like,
they don't.
They don't remember what you said.
Yeah.
Miraculous that guy realized it was the same jokes he'd head half an hour ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, many people are like, oh, this sounds familiar, but no idea. It's like sometimes when people are drunk eating food, they're like, this tastes familiar, but no idea. I'm still hungry. Let's go. Kebab is a kebab. Let's go.
Yeah. I'm all right with a kebab. I can get down.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I mean, you know, $60 late night food. I can
we're sitting in front of the
wrong guy. Anyway, so canyoning. Yeah, exactly.
Chefs eat all kinds of stuff as well.
That's what I hear, right? Well, let me just introduce you a little bit. So you are a chef. You're the head chef at 121 BC, right?
Yes.
Italian restaurant in Sayinpung?
No, here in Central.
It's in Central, right. Yeah. And
can I get the full address? Like, I just want to have it like...
Yeah, so it's on 49 Hollywood Road, just around the corner.
Prime location.
The entrance is on Graham Street.
Oh, okay. A little make sure you have a certain IQ. We're going to be 49 Hollywood Road, but entrance, Graham Street. Just to mess with the people who are trying to want to be Italian eaters.
Well, you got to be cool if you're in this part of town, right?
Yeah.
You got to make an effort. You got to search it out.
Yeah. True.
So we're bringing you on today because we want to hear about like the chef life, which if I've understood anything from Anthony Bourdain is pretty friggin' wild. And then also like what's going on with COVID and all that in restaurants. Yeah. So let's just step back a little bit. You're from Sydney?
I'm from Sydney.
How did you get... I'm as a layperson, it seems to me that being a chef is like a lifestyle.
Oh, it's definitely a commitment. I mean, you're going to miss a lot of important family events. It's very hard if you want to try and have a relationship.
Crazy hours, right?
Crazy hours. Very, very long and hard hours too. So often on my days off, I'm pretty exhausted and struggle to leave the couch sometimes.
But that's funny you said about the food because I remember someone saying like these big... five-star restaurant chefs will like eat McDonald's.
Well, I think the biggest problem is that when you're finishing work at midnight and you've been cleaning and moving fast and you're hungry and maybe you haven't made yourself some dinner at the shop.
Yeah.
What's open?
True.
You know, a lot of the time it is that kebab shop around the corner.
It always comes back to kebabs, man.
Ebenezer's is looking pretty good.
Well, I do have Beirut Bistro right across the road, and I do like their kebabs, to be fair.
Dude, that place is great. Yeah. No, that is legitimately great.
Yeah, nice.
I go there because Muhammad goes there, and he's like, this is a real deal. I'm like, all right, if you like it, I'm in.
I'm just curious, though. So, okay, like when a chef goes to a restaurant, you order a dish or whatever, let's say one day, right? And the dish comes, and it's subpar. Do you send it back or do you feel bad? Like, man, the guy probably tried hard.
Yeah, great question. Right? What's the deal? What's the deal?
Yeah, like as a comic, if I watch another comic bomb, I'm like, I kind of feel for him. I don't want to, write a letter complaint.
No, well, I'm definitely pretty relaxed when I go out to eat. I'm just happy that someone else is cooking, honestly. I don't send things back.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many things that could be going wrong. Sometimes people have bad days or also sometimes the food's just not that great and you just pay for it. You know, you can't just go out and expect five-star quality everywhere you go, you're going to get disappointed sometimes in life, and you just got to roll.
Unless you're
that.
At 121 BC, of course.
Yeah. I like to take that quote and play it before every comedy show. Sometimes
no,
in life,
that should be your marketing on the website. Sometimes you're not going to get great food.
It's on the table, Matt. You know, the terms and conditions. By ordering food, you agree to these terms and conditions.
Well, it's true. No, I'm pretty chilled about that, and especially with service. I mean, someone's serving me, they're taking their time, you know, I appreciate that. If it's really shit, sorry, can I say that?
Yeah.
If it's really poor, then, you know, sometimes you got to say something, but I mean, at the end of the day, normally 9 times out of 10, people...
Yeah, how often is it so bad?
People are trying their best 9 times out of 10, you know?
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
So how dangerous is it to send food back?
Yeah, because like everyone's got that thing of like they're going to spit my food.
I don't know if this is like too old for you, but have you seen the movie Road Trip? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So there was a movie that came out when I was like, 18, a little while ago.
Okay.
And basically this dude's in like a diner and he's like, oh, I ordered this with no sugar on it. And the guy's like, oh, yeah, let me just get that for you. And he goes and he's fucking rubbing him his balls. He's farting on it and everything. And he comes back and he's like, is this what you want? He's like, oh, it's delicious, you know.
Yeah.
Dude, ever since I saw that, I'm like, I'm never complaining ever about food. No way.
Unless it's an open kitchen. You're watching them like, okay, I see what he's doing.
Well, I actually do have an open kitchen. So there's no ball rubbing that goes on.
Yeah, but can you see below the waist?
Well, to be fair, even if there wasn't an open kitchen, I've never done that.
I'm not accusing. No, okay. My question. Like,
In general,
you do this to people. I'm just saying, if you're another restaurant, are you like, would you chance that? Would you take that risk in someone else's restaurant?
Or have you heard other chefs kind of like after hours go, hey man, the other day this guy came in, was like, this.
Oh yeah, I mean sometimes food gets sent back. That's just complete bullshit. But you know, I mean, at the end of the day, the customer's paying for it. So, you know, if they want shit food, then we can fix that up for them.
No, but my question is, are they fucking with the food?
Yeah.
No, not that I've ever seen.
Right. That makes me feel a lot better, actually.
No, you don't need to worry about
that. I'm going to start complaining.
Getting it from the source, right? Yeah. Let's go to 49 Hollywood Road right now after this.
Dude, I'm eating it 121 BC every day from now on and just sending the food back. I know it's coming back fine.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And okay, so what's the most complicated dish you have on your menu to make that, you know, every time you make it, like, man, this is one tough dish.
Yeah, is there a dish where you're like, ugh, they ordered the souffle?
Yeah,
no. Well, I think a lot of chefs would probably agree with me. It's not very complicated, but there's just a lot of components. The cheese platter. Anthony Bourdain's probably said something about that in his book as well, but... You know, it's true. Whenever there's cheese platter, everything stops because you need to cut up the cheese and you need to portion the cheese. And then you got to do the honey and the nuts and then you got to do the bread. And
dude, I'm getting hungry just
Yeah, dude. and you might have a few different types of cheeses on the menu as well. Yeah. So there's a selection. Oh, it's a pain in the ass.
Man, I never thought of, that's such a great answer.
I know. I would have thought just slice it and dice it and, you know, take it out there. But turns out that's more complicated.
Yes, they ordered the cheese platter.
Just slice, finish.
You got to unwrap all the cheese.
So we spend so much time doing prep work. So most things are already cut up. But with cheese, you don't want to do that. Otherwise, it oxidizes. You need to cut it to order. So that's one of the things where you need to stop what you're doing. You need to be focusing on that. You can't be cooking 10 things at once while you're doing it.
And you wrap it up as well, right?
And then you need to wrap it up and put it back in the fridge. And
see, I know stuff. I know what happens.
Man. Yeah, because when I go to
you know that cheese goes in the fridge. Well done, Andy.
That's like the extent of my cooking. I'm not going to lie to you. I can't boil water.
You know what we should do? We should order the cheese platter and send it back.
Every time.
I would be pissed off.
Yeah, this
you're like, hey, is this dick cheese?
Yeah, this is not a cube. It's ordered the camembert. What is this? You know, why is it melted?
These slices, they're like not thin enough.
Yeah. Exactly.
So how did you get into it? Like, because you're pretty young for head chef, right? Can I say that?
Yes.
Like, head chefs are, it's a, you there's a hierarchy to
that's
being
like a headliner
chef.
Yeah.
Chefs, no, but there's
right?
a bit similar to comedy, if I understand correctly. Being a chef, there's a hierarchy, you start out at the bottom in most kitchens, right?
Yeah, well, every head chef I've worked for before has been over 30 at least.
Which is still kind of young.
Well, I mean, that's still quite young. So I just turned 25 in February.
Which is incredible. Yeah, dude, I was 25.
I 38. I can tell stories. I couldn't stories. Cut cheese at 25. Yeah. Oh, you were definitely cutting the cheese at 25.
I can't believe how many puns you get away with.
Hey,
on a fucking comedy podcast.
How many cooks don't forget it? Yeah.
So how did you get into it? You know.
Well, I finished high school and I was at university, and cooking was always sort of a distant dream of mine, and I was always cooking for my ex-girlfriend and my friends during high school, and I really enjoyed that. And then it came up to mid-semester exams at university, and I hadn't studied, and I was like, you know what, I'm just sick of this.
What were you studying?
I was studying high school teaching and arts. I wanted to be an English and history high school teacher, and I love teaching, and that's one of the great things about my current job is I still get to teach, so I still get to fulfill that sort of sort of dream of mine.
Like, you send a cheese powder back, I'll teach you a lesson.
Yeah. I'll teach these motherfuckers about manners.
That's right.
Yeah. Get out the cane, which is exactly what I had planned for high school. But yeah, I just sort of, I fell in love with it while I was at university and just started my apprenticeship and just went with it.
And so how did you go, were you working as a chef in Sydney?
Yeah, so I worked at a place called Felix Bistro and Bars, high-end French restaurant. And then I was a sous chef at a high-end Italian restaurant after that. And then I met some guys who took over 121 BC here in Hong Kong. And then they brought me over at the start of 2018 to take over the business.
Dude, that's the dream. Getting hired from your own country, that's the dream.
Well, it was great because I'd already planned to move overseas and I had a list of places I wanted to go to. And Hong Kong was actually at the top of the list.
Wow.
But I'm the sort of guy, I was never going to, you know, apply for the visa and actually go into it. It was just a dream, like I said. And then I got offered the job out of nowhere. So
did you
make
the list though? Did you physically make a list?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I had a list of places where I really wanted to go. Not as a head chef, I just wanted to work, you know. I was happy to do dishes. I just wanted to go overseas.
Yeah, wow.
So I was very, very fortunate.
So what's your take on, like, people microwaving food? Are you one of those people, like, how dare you use this machine to heat this dish up, or like, has everything have to be fresh? Because I'm always curious, like some people are all like adamant, like, oh, microwaves this or ovens that, or you know, you everything must be fresh.
Well,
like, what's your view?
I don't have a microwave at the restaurant, and I've never worked in a restaurant that has a microwave. To be honest, I don't even have a microwave at home, but that's just because I moved into an apartment
microwave.
And I'm very disorganized. But I should probably buy one, and my life would be easier. Well, I mean, I've no problem with a microwave at home, but I've never worked with one.
Oh, okay. So even like when you were in school and all that stuff, cooking for your friends, it was all like freshly cooked food.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's passion.
Yeah, I wish I was one of your schoolmates.
Yeah, dude. Man, I would be so well nourished or something. Right?
So Hong Kong's the first place you lived out of Australia?
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
How intense was that?
Oh, well, it was crazy, I think. Well,
Sydney, I mean, like, you know, how different is it? You know, let's be very honest. You walk out, you're like,
there's more Chinese people in Sydney.
Yeah,
clearly.
Exactly. You know what I mean, you gotta go like, really? They diluted this place? What's going on?
Yeah, like, what's with all the white people? Yeah.
it was very intense. Not only the city, but also working, you know, in the head chef role. That was probably the most intense part. So for the first 6 months was getting used to the job, and then the next 6 months I actually got to explore Hong Kong a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, I'm going at the same pace as Andy is here.
Yeah,
you
know. Yeah, this is the only canyoning is the only thing I've done in the year.
In fact, I still haven't gone canyoning, and I'm almost 3 years in. But.
Well, I think I'm pretty sure that the fact that you're doing anything else other than just sitting around waiting, that's already going to be exciting to you.
Yeah,
and also, like, man, 2018 to 2020 has been pretty freaking intense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Time to be here. Yeah. At least you had a year of things being kind of normal before it just went insane.
Well, 2018 was very
normal. Right?
And then 2019 was a crazy part of Hong Kong's history with all of the protesting.
Yeah.
And then 2020 was just, you know,
crazy part of history for the planet.
For the planet. Yeah.
Oh, man.
So how's it been, like, were you guys affected by the protest much from a business point of view?
I think where we are at in Soho, we're quite lucky. I think
just a bit higher, right?
I think people act as if there's like an invisible force field around Soho that protects
it. It's crazy.
Protects it from the rest of the world, you know, so it's like the little safe space.
I mean, like it's the slope. Like, gravity does a lot. protesting requires a lot of effort walking. So you'll
see
like
joke
all the
about it, but like I genuinely think that's right.
No, it's true. Yeah, when you like, you could have the marches down in Central, you know, ending over there, and you walk up to Seoul, you're like, wow, people are just having wine.
That's the great thing about Hong Kong is they're like, we will fight for our rights, but I'm not walking up that hill.
Yeah, no. The escalator's out of order, not today.
So on Halloween night in 2019, it was the first night where the protesters actually made it up to Lan Kwai Fong.
Yeah.
And then they got pushed up
Linda's
to Soho.
Terrace and stuff, yeah. I was standing
outside of a bar.
Dude, that was
watching
intense,
all of these white
remember.
People. So I was watching all of these white people at the bar.
Yeah.
All of these Gwailos who are shocked to see these protesters. Oh my god, there's in the flesh.
Yeah.
But you know, I lived in Causeway Bay at the time on Percival Street.
So you were like,
I was pretty used to the smell of tear gas by then.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was quite funny to see.
Yeah. Because I remember Halloween night, like Hollywood. Anyway, so Halloween night, it was all Lan Kwai Fong was crazy. Closed down. They closed at 8 p.m.
Well, so just a full story, because we were in tenant at Lan Kwai Fong at the time.
Yeah.
Lan Kwai Fong Halloween is one of the biggest nights of the year.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Like, people come out. Like, Halloween is when I'm definitely out.
And they lost so much business leading up to that all of these bars were like, this is our night to make some of it back.
Yeah.
And they thought they were going to be open.
Yeah.
And then the police completely
they forgot
shut
their costumes,
the
so they were jealous, and they shut
Well, my joke was that they, in the spirit of the holiday, a bunch of Chinese soldiers were dressed as Hong Kong police officers.
Yeah, exactly. They were probably just pissed off. Everyone's dressed up like us. Hey, we're not unique costumes. Shut it down. No more police costumes.
I'm sorry, I don't speak English or Cantonese.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry. And then so like the protests actually started going up to Wellington Street and then all the way to Linda's Terrace side. And that was intense. I was there actually watching this.
And you had all these sad people that were like dressed as like a murdered clown.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why it was the weirdest thing. You're like, is that guy injured? Or
so our buddy,
okay.
Ryan, do you remember this? Ryan was like on the front of the newspaper wearing like an inflatable
green
alien.
Yeah. I remember, yeah. It was the one where I think he's like being carried by the alien. That's
the
outfit,
it was one of those things where you're like, you're wearing a thing that looks like the thing is carrying you, like you're on its shoulders or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
He's in the front of the SCMP, like, sad, like, I can't drink tonight. Like, this is Halloween. Come on.
Oh, man. And the worst thing, I bet you one day the exam's going to have that as the article that they got to write a comprehension about.
Yeah.
And the students are like,
and he's the teacher.
Mr. Hynek, what the heck?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, yeah, so Halloween was definitely one of those crazy nights that if you were there, you'd be like, whoa, this is another level. So we're approaching Halloween, by the way, everybody. Just to let you all know.
I'm not, as an Australian, I can't keep it. Is it, what is it, October?
October 31st, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't know as well.
I don't know. It's never been a thing for me. I only celebrated Halloween when I moved to Asia.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
We don't celebrate it in Australia.
I think because we don't have that many costume parties here. We don't have murder mystery and everything.
I remember there was like some American kids in our neighborhood and they tried to trick or treat and the kids just beat the crap out of them. They're
you
like,
can't win, man.
They're like, get him! They're like running down the street chasing him with throwing eggs.
Yeah.
My memories of Halloween in Australia is mostly people going around throwing eggs at houses.
Maybe it came in after my time. I think maybe some level they celebrated, but it's not a big thing at all.
Yeah.
They didn't celebrate it even a little bit.
Well, I think it was an excuse for just the teenagers to leave home and just cause a ruckus.
To go throw eggs and stuff. Yeah. But we were throwing eggs at houses like every other week.
So this is just like, well, this time it's okay.
Yeah.
You can live with it. So what about the rest? Do you go with any themes? Like, let's say, you know, Christmas time, you got to go with certain, do you change your menu much?
I think during Christmas time, people do expect a bit more of a, you know, a festive menu.
Cranberry sauce.
I'm a sucker for that, by the way.
Yeah?
I'm a huge sucker.
Yeah, like sort of like whole roasted spring chicken, things like that.
So like nowadays more pumpkin and everything in autumn.
Yeah, yeah. So
dude,
I work very...
He's not running Starbucks, all
right? I'm just saying. I'm just curious because like, I'm always wondering, like, why do we have to go with the themes of like, oh, that time we must have some turkey now that it's Christmas
time.
Well,
I work super seasonal. So we do Italian food. And I keep it very, very seasonal. It's a way that, coming from Sydney as an Australian chef, it's a way that we're trained because we use whatever's fresh from
so
Australia.
You mean seasonal as in fresh produce, not the season that, hey, now's the season to be using this particular... I mean, sorry, this season calls for, like, turkey.
Well, like you said, pumpkin in autumn. So,
yeah.
so
So not now, because of Halloween. That's what it tastes good.
Oh, really? No,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
See, I never knew that.
So autumn. So now we have great butternut squash. We have great porcini wild mushrooms.
Yeah.
You know, Brussels sprouts. So all of these things are now coming onto the menu. And I change the menu very regularly based on what's in season.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will pay more attention.
He's looking at this like a comedian. Like comedians, we're like, we don't want to change our jokes, but we'll change the poster. So that people think the show is different. Like, it's a Halloween special. I'm going to be talking about, you know, relationships.
It's the same dish.
And you're going to wear some sort of a stupid costume.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not that happy.
Or like the situation.
Basically what you're wearing now, Andy.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, I'm not changing. I wouldn't wear shorts on stage. I'll give myself that much. But it definitely, we just look at it like, how do we convince people we're doing something different without changing anything?
Yeah, Christmas comedy special.
Every time.
Yeah, and there's like one Christmas joke or something. So
people are like, knock, knock, it's Santa. Anyway, so I was wondering about the other.
Yeah, exactly. Or any joke that's, you know, didn't happen at that day, it happened on last Christmas, right? It's just like every scenario you try to squeeze into that theme. Like, oh, it happened last Halloween. Oh.
Yeah, that's the go-to. Is like, yeah, you're like, anyway, last week at Christmas. Christmas was last year. Whatever. It happened 10 years ago. I haven't changed my material. So, do you like Hong Kong? Are you a fan?
I love Hong Kong. Yeah, I really do. It's like we said, it's been an interesting time to live here, but no, I'm happy to be here.
It's we just got a light on above us. I think Vivek just got an idea.
Yeah. No, you said he likes Hong Kong. They're like, all right, we'll give you some electricity to that.
Hong Kong clearly likes me too, my God.
To our listeners, actually, during the whole podcast recording, we've had this one light that's flashed every maybe 3 minutes. Like randomly once.
I didn't notice.
Oh, yeah. It was like a one quick flash, like, you know, someone taking a photo of us. And the moment you said you like Hong Kong, you know, it's been an interesting year and everything. immediately, the light's on permanently now. So that's already a good sign, or else we're being watched.
On that note, I should say, we need to say a massive thank you to Aftermath, because we're recording in Aftermath today, and it's been super awesome for
Over here at Wyndham Street. Like, we actually do shows all the time at the Aftermath. Oh, sorry, not we. I mean, these guys do shows all the time, and I like to show up every now and then.
We come. No, I mean, yeah, like, we do shows here. And they're also, on the 12th of October, they've got a Rocket League tournament, which is a PS4 tournament.
Yeah, right over there. 7:30 p.m., there's a prize tournament, $500 Hong Kong dollars to the winner if you play Rocket League at the Aftermath Gaming Suite.
And I don't want to say that it's easy, but Muhammad won last time. So
wow. Okay. I might enter then.
I'm guessing if you have a hand, I think you can win it.
Yeah. So let me do this. The Aftermath Gaming Series presents Rocket League Prize Tournament. Hong Kong, $500 Hong Kong dollars to the winner. Free entry. Round robin, then knockout. 12th October, 7:30 p.m. See you then.
That's why you earn the big bucks, really.
Yeah, that's very it.
Dude, on that note about the protesting in this area, I remember, so we were... I think still we must have been still finishing our renovations around that time, and a Thursday after. Do you remember there was like 2 weeks when the universities went crazy?
Oh, that was September.
And then there was just like there was random protesting anywhere in the city.
So
went
that
from
was
like being like Causeway Bay on a Sunday to just like you're just gonna run into it.
Well, I remember there was one Monday night where it felt like the whole city was on fire.
Like
17 districts across Hong Kong.
It must have been that 2 week period, I'm sure.
That would have been like, I think the when they made the mask ban, when they banned the mask, and that was the night that everything went crazy.
So we got hit with tear gas in the lobby of California Tower on like 4 p.m. on a Thursday and had to just cut up the hill. And there's like people scrambling. The whole of Lan Kwai Fong was full of tear gas. And we went up the stairs to Wyndham Street and expats just standing in the street drinking. And I was just like, it was
another world.
It was surreal. It was like you could literally turn and look between the buildings and it's like carnage, historical protesting. Yeah. And they're just white people being like, oh God, what's so crazy we're living here still, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, the good thing about the Aftermath is it's in the basement. It's actually on the 57 to 59 Wyndham Street.
I love
lower
how
you're
just marketing everything.
No, the reason I'm doing that is I want to make sure whenever we need to use the space, we still can.
Yeah, we can come back. Yeah.
And let's say we were getting tear gas outside. This is a very safe haven over
here.
This
is like a bomb shelter of safety.
It literally is a bomb shelter. But yeah, I mean, that's actually what happens. When I've been out to the protest, you will have people in coffee shops looking out the window, sipping coffee, and you've got guys outside trying to hand... umbrellas and water bottles and everything. And I remember I was over in Wanchai side where the Wanchai police station area is. And there's like, I believe, one of these cafes, and these two expats were looking out the window having the coffee, and someone ran up, "Hey, you have water? You have water?" Like, "No, no, water, just coffee." I'm like, "Could you just go and get a bottle of water?"
Yeah, what,
like,
you, no water in your freaking coffee?
Yeah, like what the hell, man? I remember that so well because like people like running because like in over at Pacific Place, that was where the fight off between the police and the frontline protesters were. So they wanted to get the water there, you know, to help with the tear gas or the pepper spray and stuff like that. And it was just bizarre. I was looking at these guys like, "No, just coffee. I'm sorry." I'm like,
so funny.
Never mind.
That my friend back home was like, "Why do they have umbrellas?" I was like, "Because the most dangerous thing I've seen in China in 11 years was a Chinese person with an umbrella."
Yeah.
I'm amazed exactly. I have my eyes.
Yeah, still, yeah. Because like. I get like in the Western world, you're thinking Mary Poppins are going to fly away or something.
No, I'm thinking about my eyeballs when they look around in the middle of the sunny day with a freaking umbrella. Like. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. The most dangerous thing to a Chinese person with an umbrella is direct sunlight.
Yeah.
that should have been what the government attacked them with.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, we're just going to bring the sun.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Just huge spotlight or just, you know, UV rays to clear up the ozone layer.
Like, "Oh yeah, you think you have rights? Well, you're going to have a slight tan."
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So your friends will think that you're poor now.
Exactly. All the middle-aged women are like, "We're not protesting this. We can't do that. That's sunlight. I like my skin being white."
So how's it been now? So we did a podcast last week about everything's opening up. Restaurants weren't really shut, but business is coming back now, yeah?
Like, oh, yeah. Business is actually booming now. I think people have just... Well, think about Hong Kong. The apartments are so small. So as soon as people are allowed outside, they just got to get out.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
They're back in droves, eating out at the bars. It's been great.
And I think people are just tired of their own food, like cooking at home or whatever, getting takeaway. If I now see another plastic dish, I'm going to kill someone. I need to see an actual plate somewhere.
Dude, and I love, I keep cutting cheese for myself. It's
and then sending it back.
It's taking up most of my day. Right?
Being in a tiny apartment, that's the last thing you should be doing, cutting the cheese over there.
Again, just stop.
As long as you wrap it up
I
and put it back.
I love how Fabio's brought more comedic integrity than you have. As the quote unquote professional. So business is booming, but it must be tough after so much time shut down.
Well, that's the thing. What people forget, business is booming, but we're also in rental debt. We're working on the bare minimum of staff. It's been...
And landlords are pretty friendly in Hong Kong, right?
Yeah, of course. Well, we're very fortunate with our landlords, so they've been very understanding.
That's got to be worth its
worth. That's a blessing.
I can't say the same for the rest of the food and beverage industry.
Yeah,
but we're very lucky, and they've been very understanding. They've given us quite a bit of help, and we basically said to them, we said, "Look, if after this, if you want a restaurant here, then you got to help us out, you know, because we're operating at 50% capacity. We haven't been allowed to do dinners for most of the time. They did an alcohol ban at one point. It was just getting ridiculous."
Do the landlords get a discount?
I don't think in Hong Kong, no.
No, I mean like
there are stuff like.
Do you mean?
No, like, I mean like when they come to your government. Restaurant. No,
oh,
I mean.
Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Like, I was like, you're like, "Bro, I don't know." I'm like, "You decide."
Well, yeah, oh, sorry.
No, okay. No,
I thought you meant like
for their rates or whatever.
I know in places like France when they did the lockdown, they were making sure that like mortgages weren't paid.
Banks get pressured for giving them like.
Yeah. So when they did the lockdown, they stopped the whole infrastructure. But in Hong Kong, no. But yes, of course. I mean, yeah, we take care of the landlords.
Nice.
No, because I think you do actually.
Oh, of course.
Like they come in, they're like, "Come on, get the fucking cheese out."
Because like. Yeah.
Well, no. I mean, if they come in, that was like, you know, like these are our landlords, you know, and they're nice guys. Like I said, they've been great to us. You know, let's treat them to like a free,
fair enough, yeah,
a
yeah.
free drink or a free cheese like, platter or something.
A free drink.
Yeah,
no, like we went 3 months without paying.
No,
rent,
but
and we'll give you this glass of rosé.
Yeah, exactly. 50% off your
Prosecco.
Beverage.
It sounds like your landlord's a terrible businessman.
Well, I don't want to give them too much free shit. They'll be like, "Well, if you're giving it out free stuff, why can't you pay the rent?"
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly. that yeah, happening. Yeah, yeah. Clearly doing off. Well. Yeah. Like, well yeah. Clearly doing well enough to give out free food.
Yeah, you can't have both ways. Like, you give me free stuff. I'm like, wait a second, you're giving free stuff. That's why you make no money. That's not my problem now.
Well,
yeah.
That's it. That is exactly like when the landlord came in for the first time, I did text my boss. I said, hey, what's the go here? Like, am I giving them a free dish or would that come off as us being negligent because we're behind on rent? So, I mean, like, what do I do here? It was like, no, take care of it.
It'd be funny. You go in there like, we don't charge anyone, actually.
Yeah.
I just like making food, you know. It's kind of my thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's out of my pocket. Charity and you're the one paying for it.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. Because like, I was always wondering, I'm like, if I were ever a landlord, if I ever became a landlord, I would actually be very picky with who I like let rent out the space because I would want to rent it at something that I want a discount for.
Look at you imagining what your life might be like if you had money.
This is what
right,
happened
so
when
your building would be full of kebab shops then.
Yeah. I'm like, if I owned several buildings in Hong Kong, the way that I would approach it is...
Level 3 kebab shop, level 4 massage.
Dude, I just know like day one you'd be like, fuck this, I'm screwing these guys over for money. I'm gonna quadruple the rent. I'm gonna start my own Italian restaurant in the space.
Just opposite them?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's happened. Like, people actually, I've seen guys, they will actually, like, if you have your own 7-Eleven franchise that like, you've opened, you'll have the guys who gave you that franchise, they'll open one opposite you just to run you out of business. They can keep all the money.
Someone once said to me that if they're in Jewish communities, right?
Yeah.
If someone is a shoemaker, then someone else will be like, I'm going to make socks. You know, they make like complementary businesses. Yeah. But in China and Russia, if they're like, I'm a shoemaker, they're like, I'm also a shoemaker. You know, like they just, the strategy is rather than to build complementary businesses is to replicate the businesses that are doing well.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. No wonder.
I think it's, from what I've seen, it's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
I mean, China and Russia is my wheelhouse, so I know those two.
But so, okay, so speaking of like competition and stuff, like who would you say is your biggest competitor? Not restaurant-wise, but I'm saying like in general, you know, any type of food or something is the biggest competitor to like an Italian restaurant of yours?
Do you look at competition?
I definitely do. Like, well, when I first landed in Hong Kong, I definitely made a point of eating around at all of the restaurants in Soho, all of the Italian ones anyway, just to see, you know, what the sort of standard was and also to get an idea of what was doing well, what was being successful, and also to get an idea of the pricing point because pricing is so important.
Did you go all the way? Did you even go to Spaghetti House?
No, definitely not.
He's like running fancy restaurants.
Spaghetti House, Caesarea, Pizza Hut, all these places.
I wasn't too worried. I mean, you know, I wasn't too worried because like we do something quite different. I think we've got a pretty interesting menu and we've already got a great following when I took over. So that was mainly just to get a gauge of pricing and to get a gauge of just the sort of basically the quality of what I'm dealing with. And you know, I hate to say it, but after that, I was fairly confident.
What do you think is great about 1-2-1 BC? Like, why should people go there?
I think it's just very authentic, homely. I mean, we make our own pasta, we make our own bread, we make our own cheese, we make our own gelato and sorbet, we make our own limoncello. I mean.
You got tiramisu?
Do they do that at Pizza House?
I don't have tiramisu at the moment. and I think and we've got a great wine selection as well.
Yeah.
And we've got a really friendly team. We've got one long shared table. So it feels very sort of, you know, convivial, very family style. Just very, very casual but refined. And I think people just have a great time there.
Okay. Yeah, because like for me, when I go to eat Italian, the one thing I like to end it with after the pizza, pasta, whatever, is like always like a tiramisu. Isn't that like a very typical signature dish?
Tiramisu is definitely Italy's most famous dessert.
So that's why. It's more
the pavlova
pop.
Of Italy.
Yeah, it's just like
honest.
A pop dessert, right? Like it's like you're in a restaurant expecting lassi and stuff. It's not like we Indians drink it every day, but it's just like...
Yeah, that's also part of the reason why I don't have it on the menu.
Yeah.
Because... I want to give something
different.
I want to give something that's a bit more, that's a bit different. And, you know, every other Italian restaurant here has tiramisu on the menu. So I try and offer something
a bit different. It's funny that you mentioned that. I do actually have pavlova on the menu at the moment.
Yeah, dude, pavlova's killer.
Not classic Italian, but in my Italian-Australian family growing up, it was definitely a staple around Christmas time.
Dude, pavlova is the jam. Do you know what it is?
I must have had it before.
It's like an Australian dessert. It's sort of puff.
The main reason is because...
It's a puffy
one, right? Yeah. Oh, I think I've had it. Yeah.
The main reason is because when you make so much fresh pasta, there's always so much egg whites left over. Mm. So it's just a great way to make use of...
Oh, yeah, the puffy egg white thing. Okay.
Exactly. It's a great way to make use of something that would otherwise be wastage.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's also awesome.
And
as
also
well.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Okay, so question. Is it pronounced pizza or pizza?
Vivek with the hard-hitting questions. Fabio in the spotlight.
No, because I've asked my spaghetti house questions. I was even going to ask if you had paisanas when you were doing your research, but I figured, you probably did all that stuff.
That's
as well.
That's a comedy go-to, paisanas.
Paisanas, yeah. I mean, does it piss you off when you see someone who just been to your restaurant yesterday is now at Paisanos eating pizza?
No, of course not. I eat Paisanos all the time.
Oh. All right, I'm trying to help your restaurant over here, but okay.
I guess we're not as fancy as Paisanos.
No, we don't do pizza. I mean, pizza, if you're listening here to the way that I said it, I think I just tried to answer Vivek's question.
Yeah, I'm not that cluey.
Anyway, yeah. You see, this is my limited knowledge. I've grown up in Hong Kong my whole life, so Italian food growing up was really literally Spaghetti House. And it was terrible. Now that I've been to Soho much more, I'm like, oh, okay, you mean you can hand make the stuff?
I'm shaking my head right now.
Dude, man, you have no idea the limitations I'm living under.
How different is it working here to working in Australia? Like, what were the differences?
Very different, very different. I think the main thing is the staff. It's very...
Ouch.
Chinese.
Well, no, I mean...
Sydney, that's, yeah.
I mean, that sounds harsh. But what I mean is that in Australia... The people who work in the kitchen, they're only in the kitchen if they really want to be chefs, really. I feel like everyone sort of has that drive or motivation. Because in Australia, you can get the same paying job, but work 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, as an electrician or as a different trade, and have a much easier life. But in Hong Kong, chefs, I think, are actually decently paid. I'm pretty sure the average wage in Hong Kong is something like 15,000-16,000 as an office worker a month.
Yeah.
And that's the same that chefs get a month. So if you're relatively unqualified, if you're otherwise going to be at home some sort of a housewife, and you know how to cook, then there are lots of kitchen jobs out there and there are so many restaurants looking for staff. So you get a lot of staff who are sort of underqualified and don't treat it as the intensity of a career that you get from chefs in Australia. So that's a hard thing for me, but when I've quite high standards and I don't want to sound like a slave driver, but you know, we work quite hard at my restaurant to produce the quality. So it's pretty hard to find people who
meet that standard.
Who really care, about the passion and about the cooking and about delivering that standard and about going above and beyond about the customer experience, because you get a lot more chefs here who sort of just treat it like a job and do it for the hours and then go home. And yeah, so it's a very different, but you need to find that balance, and you need to find a way to inspire people, who need that sort of extra inspiration when it's not just about the food or when they can't create the motivation for themselves.
No, true. I think that's one of the weaknesses of Hong Kong. I mean, even with comedy, when we do Cantonese comedy, the first question is not oh, where's the show? How can I get in? It's more how much do you guys make? People immediately want to know, is this worthwhile to my time?
For people that are performing there
Or just
that?
Generally, they're just curious. Oh, hey, come to an open mic, you try it out, give it a shot. They're like, well, is this an actual job? Can I make money off of this? I'm like, well,
you're like, open as mic. As the biggest comedian in the city, I can categorically say no.
Exactly. <Yeah. laughs> This is what I do, people. These are my tax returns, see?
Yeah, I think also, from my perspective, it seems like, especially in Melbourne and Sydney, restaurant industry is pretty well developed.
Oh, yeah.
It's extremely well developed. The standard is, I remember I worked in cafes and stuff when I was in university, a long time ago. And even going back to the cafes I used to work at, I'm like, whoa, the standard has just gotten so high. Even a floor staff, you've got to be on your game, really high quality service, and otherwise people just won't even go. Exactly. Because the place down the road is so good.
Exactly. And don't get me wrong, Hong Kong is a very, very competitive restaurant scene.
Probably
Soho's
probably one of the higher
Soho's probably the most one of the most competitive places on the planet mm-hmm. for restaurants. But like I said, I mean, there's just you got to find that balance in the kitchen in Hong Kong because you need it's hard to find good staff who really really care about just the food. And also when you're a restaurant and you can't offer, you're not a bank. So if you find good staff, you can't just offer an unlimited amount of salary. You know, we've got our overheads. We've got a very specific budget.
Yeah.
No matter how good you are.
Give them options in the business or anything
like
that. Yeah,
exactly. Like no matter how good you are as a restaurant, you're only making so much profit. So there's only so much that you can offer to good staff.
Especially now, like this.
Especially now, exactly.
So what's it been like, you know, things are opening up, right?
Yeah.
Like you guys didn't really shut, but now you're open till midnight and you can have more people seated at a table, which is huge for restaurants.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the process now that you've got to how are you going with restaffing and all of that?
Well, I'm quite surprised. So two of my cooks just quit. They just resigned. Like I said, I think we've been very, very busy. And we have been working hard. I'm not. There's no doubt about it. But I think, you know, like I said, some people just aren't really a big fan of the really busy restaurant. I've always worked in busy restaurants. I love it, and that's part of the reason why
it's
I love
the energy,
the job.
Right?
It's the energy. Yeah. It's the adrenaline. It's the drive. But so I'm pretty screwed at the moment. But it's been strange to restart. Because I still have so many constraints, money-wise, but I'm still working understaffed at the moment. So I worked 85 hours this week, 9 a.m. to midnight.
I haven't worked 85 hours this year.
Yeah. So I'm pretty tired, but that's just, you know, something that I have to do in order to keep the business going.
So seeing that we have such a large audience base, I'm sure we have some people that are talented that might be right for the job. If they were to be interested in your job, two things. Number one, what would be required for the staff that you're looking for? Number two, what's the application method?
Well, first of all, application method, you can email me. It's chef@121bc.hk. Email me your CV. Or, I mean, what I think I can teach people how to cook my food, no problem. What I ask for is I ask for a good attitude, someone who gives a shit, and someone who just, you know, just tries hard. And I think when you treat a job where you really care, the job's it doesn't feel so much like work anymore. That's the way that I approach my
work. Well, that just cancelled out a whole bunch of comedians.
Yeah, well, it's most of our listeners out there. We focus on mediocre quality.
Yeah.
But I think it's probably a job. I guess given the nature of how easy it is for people to complain, it's a job where quality is scrutinized way more carefully because every customer's a frigging critic, right?
Yes, yes.
It's not like if you're at an accounting firm, you're going to have some staff that kind of phone it in, but... If you're at a restaurant, small team, it's like if you're putting out crap,
oh yeah,
it's gonna get picked up.
And like I said, we also have an open kitchen, so we have eyes on us from the customers. So if the food's not up to par, then there's that extra pressure.
How do you feel about the open kitchen?
Well, I designed it actually, so I should have.
I regret it every day.
One-way windows. Why didn't I think of that? The one-way
like,
windows.
It's so hard to rub people's toast all over my ass when they sent it back.
My original design was not meant to be as open as it is now. It is. If you walk in, it's very open. But but no, I do like it. I specifically wanted an open kitchen because I wanted it to feel more as if there's like that time and effort going into the food and make it feel more relatable. And also I like the extra, maybe I sound cynical and demonic, but I like the extra pressure on the rest of my team to work clean.
With eyes on them.
To work clean and work professional. You know, it's not just me
telling
them to do so. It's literally, you've got the whole restaurant watching you like now, you know, let's that's the way we got to be. We really got to be.
It's like
know?
It's like candid camera without the camera.
It sounds like an open restaurant's like an open relationship. It's good in theory, but everyone can see the terrible things you're doing.
Oh man, yeah. I mean, so okay, so people come in, they sit down, they order the food, then they leave. Like, have you had one of those customers that, you know, you in the kitchen are going like, I want to see what's going on with these two.
You're like, hey, you didn't wash your hands.
Yeah. Or do you have that regular guy that every time you're like, another lady? What's going on with this guy? He's really working hard.
Well, the main reason I designed the open kitchen is so that I can check out the beautiful ladies.
Yeah,
you know, it works both ways.
Out, Join a gym. I mean, like, it's not that hard.
And I told my girlfriend she's fine with it. No.
So it sounds like an open relationship. Yeah, open kitchen exactly. are pretty similar, actually.
No, it is definitely funny to see the customers and how they react. But it makes my job a lot easier as well. In terms of like the pacing of how and when to serve out the send out the food,
yeah,
I can actually see how far in the meal they are physically. I can see, you know, the reactions of the customer, so it's like free feedback almost. You know, I can sort of know better how to create a vibe. Is the music too loud? Is the music too soft? You know, are people having a good time? People whispering? I don't want people whispering my restaurant.
Why is that?
I just you
it
know,
can't be a good sign, right?
We're a fun, we're a casual place. I want boisterous laughter. You know, I want.
Oh, so you mean you don't want the customer area to be too quiet? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like, you know, I like when there's a bit of energy. Obviously, Monday, Tuesday, sort of date night, it's more okay. But you know, Friday, Saturday night, like, yeah. let's create a vibe. You know, let's go here. You know, let's
Monday, yeah. Tuesday is the first date night and stuff where I was like, hey, so you like this?
One of the things we like, do you want to have sex after this? Are you really ordering the lobster? We should send this cheese platter back. One of the things we noticed at the comedy club is there would be guys, actually no, women as well. That would always come on dates, but they'd have a different person every
time.
Yeah,
there'd be a few of those.
Right.
Like, we were their go-to date place, but the date was changing.
Yeah, well, we have those customers too, but they also make an effort of befriending us. So
you don't throw them under the bus.
So we don't throw them under the bus.
You're like, hey!
So we have a few...
Who's she?
Yeah, so we have a few friends at the restaurant where it's kind of known that that's what happens, and we...
So you get the same thing?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, that's great.
Wow. I don't feel so special anymore. Out here, I was thinking like, oh, they're bringing their dates to the comedy club. Turns out that's a normal thing. Oh,
who
man.
Complains more? Well, okay. Who complains more, first question, Australians or people in Hong Kong?
And you're doing business in Hong Kong, so do consider
I'm guessing that. Complaining is a huge part of the job.
Yeah. I mean, that's tough to say. I think it's pretty similar across the globe. Yeah.
Next question. How does local compare to expat?
Oh, I wasn't going to go there.
Definitely going there.
I was like, okay. I can guarantee local.
I would have said expat was worse.
No, I was going to say local is much less. Local is we'll just never come back. Like, I have a joke.
Oh, no. So the locals always complain about the bill. They'll just be given looks like, wow, you know, these are very, really small portions, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Right. And then the bill is not extensive. I mean, the standard bill would be about $600 per person, including drinks, which I think for Soho, if you're having some glasses of wine and a nice meal, I think that's pretty standard.
Yeah.
So when you get locals coming from different part of town and then they have the meal because they've seen it on Instagram, then they might be a little bit taken aback if that's not what they're used to.
No, it's very common. Like, I used to have a joke before where I was like, I would go to these restaurants and every now and then like the waiter would be like, is everything okay? And I'm thinking, like, even if it wasn't, I wouldn't tell you, number one. And number two, if it wasn't good, telling you doesn't change anything. I would go to openrice.com and be like, yeah, don't go there. Don't go there. So I think that would be the case, right? Like, you have a lot of, I'm sure, especially locals more who take photos of the food. And you're thinking it's from memory, but it's not from memory. It's actually investigation.
Yeah, well, so our rating on TripAdvisor is much better than our rating on OpenRice. Sure.
Why is that?
It's probably the price point.
It's the price point, yeah.
Interesting.
Because over here, there's this...
So OpenRice users are cheapskates. Is that what we're getting out of this?
No.
I don't want to be racist.
But you're going to be racist.
So OpenRice, because it's much more local and also more general, the mentality, like, for example, it's someone who doesn't eat this quality food all the time will not be able to appreciate why it's costing this amount. You're paying more than just the food, the atmosphere, the whole mood, the open kitchen, you get to watch guys cook your food, stuff like that.
And also the exorbitant rent in Soho.
Exactly,
comes into my budget.
Oh, 100%. Oh my God. Dude, the rents in this part of town?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So that's why I tell people when people come down to Soho, like, and I have a lot of friends who have probably never been to Soho in their whole lives, and they lived here their whole lives, and because they're like, Lanque Phong, right? That's good enough. And like, no, it's a whole different vibe over here.
Dude, someone once pointed out to me, so Melbourne's one of the most expensive rent real estate markets in the world. Sydney's slightly more expensive.
Yeah.
But someone pointed out to me that what we were paying for our small comedy club was the same as a giant, one of the biggest hospitals in Melbourne.
Wow.
Like, that's how expensive
the rent is. Oh, yeah. You think that Sydney and Melbourne is expensive, but then you get to Hong Kong.
Hong Kong's on another planet. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So before we're going to wrap it up here pretty soon, is there anything that you want to tell people about the restaurant so they can come down and check it out?
Yeah, come down and check it out.
Wow, you really broke some ground, man.
Yeah. He's just a very straightforward. He's like, I will give you my best advertising presentation.
Yeah. Eat food there. Yeah,
that's good. Me cook, you like. Bill, okay, 600. Let's do it.
Dude, thanks so much for coming in today. It's been awesome to have you on.
No, thanks for having me.
A lot of fun.
Thanks for getting me out of bed at 11 a.m. on Sunday, Andy.
Hey, we got the guy from Kyle from Aftermath came out as well.
Yeah.
Like, we've done pretty well here. All right, guys. Thanks, and we will catch you next week. Bye.